My name is Ramon Garcia. I was born in Bishop in August 31st, 1929. That was when the Depression was really hitting in the Bishop area. In fact, all over. And, well, it was rough during the Depression. And, of course, I don't remember what went on or anything except what I was told later by my parents. And things were really rough. They used to work for 50 cents a day at that time, and mostly grubbing and clearing land for, you know, for farmland. And my father got in the grocery business, and for a long time he raised 13 other kids besides us before he even got married. People coming from Mexico left some of the kids with him, and so he raised, and he got most of them married except one, which still lives in Bishop.
Can you tell us where you got your father got the produce?
Well, I know that everything was either trucked in or there was a railroad through Bishop, and they used to get most of their merchandise that way, and then they had to go pick it up at the depot sometimes, either by wagon or by a little pickup.
Can you tell us about the road conditions then?
The roads were all dirt roads, and of course on black land and heavy clay like it is around that Bishop country, it was hard getting around. And of course they usually got stuck, and it'd probably take a whole day to get out. But even though conditions were bad, they seemed to do all right. They did it all right eventually. And of course, then my father got married, and of course we were born. And we came into this world, they say, and then when I was 4 years old, I was operated at diphtheria at the time. There was a doctor and a specialist, and they couldn't take me to the hospital because it was to Kingsland, because it was very contagious. So I was operated at home. And
who operated? Who was that?
Dr. Starch and Dr. Cook.
They were from Bishop?
Well, I think one was from Bishop, one was from Kingsland at the time. And I think the specialist got a little shaky, so the doctor finished the operation. My father fainted. And of course they were holding my arms and my legs, you know, and a little table. And I came out of it all right, I guess. So now as far as the country in Bishop, it's mostly farming country, and the main crops is usually cotton and grain. And of course at that time, like I say, the roads were bad. Things were bad, and the Spanish community, since at that time you could not be, let's see, in other words, we were segregated, and we were approximately about a mile from the main part of town, on the west side of town, and I think as my father told me, there was five Mexican families that started in that area at the time. And of course things were bad because they had these what do they call this, Ku Klux Klan at the time, that was fairly strong in the Bishop area.
Can you tell us anything about their activities? Or anything you've heard?
Well, the only thing is that I've heard through the stories, I don't know whether it's hearsay or true, but according to this it was true. One time that colored man coming through Highway 77 broke down, and he tried to call a lady, and it was an Anglo girl, and she went out and called some of the law enforcement officers and said that man was trying to attract her attention, so he was put in jail, and about a couple of nights later he was found burned alive in a little jail.
Yeah.
No, it was just, you know, talks from what people But those were some of the things that occurred. And then, of course, the serf and feather deal was fairly prevalent at the time. Finally, there was a group of Mexican people that got together, and they called it what they called the Norífica. And they formed, got together, and they sent note to these people in the Ku Klux Klan deal that whatever happened to any Mexican would happen to two Anglos. So actually, eventually that kind of stopped, but the hatred was still there. I mean, we weren't allowed in school, Mexican American. We had our own little school for a long time on the west side. In fact, we had about three rooms there for about till the fourth, fifth grade, and that's as high as you could go, and that was it. You couldn't go to high school or anything else because they wouldn't allow you. Finally, in 42, this Mexican girl, Rebecca, Mexican American girl, Rebecca Valverde, was the first one to go to school in 1942, I think it was, in high school. She was admitted in high school. And then, of course, at the time, we were going to Kingsville High School, I mean, to the Kingsville School, because they wouldn't allow Mexicans in Bishop over the fourth grade. So, I think, what, fourth or fifth grade, something like that. Anyway, they had several classes there, and I think it didn't go over the sixth grade. And so we were going to Kingsville, and in 1945, the school superintendent, which at the time was Mr. Parsons, and I think Mr. Merchant was the principal, must have been through the school trustees, asked if we would, if I would want to go back to Bishop, you know, to finish school, complete high school. And I was, at the time, a junior at Bremer High School in Kingsville. And so I said that I would. And of course, they told me that they would give us protection. So this girl had been, Becky had been going to high school since 1942, and I started in 1945, and we both graduated in 1947. And since then, of course, we went through college, we went through the Army, and we opened up a new business, and can you hold it on, please? Before I graduated from high school, I got to play football with a team. Of course, I was really overweight, about 112 pounds. And we did pretty good. We won the first game and we won the last one. We lost everything in between. Now, when I was young and growing, we had Miss Lane, or Mother Lane, which used to cure people. And it was, in fact, there one time she had about eight or nine doctors which thought that she was a quack and would come over and, you know, try to check her out. And they couldn't find anything wrong, that she could fall into a trance, and that they just couldn't find anything to pin her that she wasn't. She was a quack, you see. So anyway, when I was a kid, I used to see a lot of the what you call meetings, or seance meetings, or groupings, or whatever it was, and I got to see a lot of those, since she was a kin to my mother, and she started with this trances at the age of 12. According to my mother, she used to tell me they were living in Mier, in the state of Tamaulipas in Mexico. And what happened was that at that time, one of the fevers, I'm not sure whether it was the chicken pox or measles or something was taking, killing a lot of people in Mexico. And so she and her brother, when they both got sick, they made a pact that if whoever died, they would try to communicate with each other. And so according to my mother, she said that after her brother died, she survived. You know, my aunt survived, of course I called her aunt. And she survived, and she said, they claim that at the age of 12, she started having, I don't know, some kind of things that would scare her, really. And she was really scared that somebody would call her name or something. She couldn't see anybody, couldn't hear it. I mean, she could hear, but she couldn't see anybody. So at one time in one of her dreams, she was told to have a piece of paper and a pencil, leave a piece of paper and a pencil in on the table. That night she went to sleep, and it come up at in the morning. They claimed that it was written in there that they should have saved that piece of paper really, but it claimed that it was written that not to be afraid, that it was her brother trying to communicate with her, and that she was going to have a great something from God to be able to help other people. In other words, a gift from God. So from then on, she started just falling into trances. That they wouldn't leave her by herself, because she would go into a trance just with anything. So they started being with her most of the time, and my mother was usually around her. And since that time, of course, then I went to a lot of those seance gatherings that they had. She treated a lot of people, and I saw a lot of people cured through her working with her hands. And all she used was two sheets, a bottle of Vicks, a bottle of alcohol, roll of cotton, gauze, and she always used a pair of scissors, and that's about all she needed. And she would treat the affected area, whether it was a stomach ache or appendicitis or whatever it was, and she would take stuff from there and drop it into, of course, a bucket. And of course, she used to wear just a little white dress. And of course, at that time, we didn't have nothing but fans, she said. And she used to wear a little white dress, of course, and you couldn't see where she could hide anything that she could put in there in her hands. She just, what happened on the area that she was trying to treat, you see, she would leave a little red spot in there, something like a needle hole or something like that. But she used scissors, and she never did cut or anything, no incision, no sewing, no nothing. But she could come out with all that stuff. And of course, I saw people, I say walk, people that were really couldn't walk due to arthritis or other diseases. And I got to see them even dance, because they used to have their own dances there at the place. And she used to live in Kingsville. Mother Lane used to live in Kingsville. My father would take her and bring her in the mornings and take her in at night in a little pickup. And I used to take a ride with him every time too, because I always kind of liked that, you know.
What happened to her?
Well, she finally moved after my father died, and my mother was still a bishop. She moved to Corpus. And she finally passed away, I think, about 10 years ago.
Does she still have her practice?
No, my aunt, you know, the one that was curing, no, she passed away, and of course that was it. Now, her house was demolished due to a new expressway coming through her place in Corpus. So there's nothing that I know except her son that is still living in Corpus.
What did y'all do for entertainment around this address?
Well, mostly there were a few dances, and they celebrated the 16th of September and the 5th of May. Mexican style. And most
how
of
was
the
Mexican style?
Well, that somebody would come over and say a little something about Mexico, you know, how they got the independence of course, in most of the dancing was done through the musical instruments used were guitars and accordions. And nobody used to sing. He was a sissy, what you call a sissy nowadays. Anybody would be caught singing, or anybody besides having white or black or brown was a sissy. Anything in red, man with red or blue or yellow or pink or whatever, man, I tell you, he is from the other world. And but as far as entertainment, we didn't, there wasn't much, except they just worked hard all week.
And how did you put time? What did you all do during your spare time?
Well, we'd play a little softball, a little hardball, but mostly it was homemade things that we used to play with. We didn't have much as far as, well, no parks, no nothing really, except just play marbles, maybe go shoot birds with the slingshots. And,
what did you call slingshots?
Well, we used to call them nigger shooters.
And how was
that? Well, I don't know. We just got nigger shooters, and that was it. So I didn't finally realize what I was saying until I got old enough and I found out what it was, and somebody got mad about it. You mean white shooters?
Can you tell me what you used when you were playing softball?
Well, we used to use an old mesquite limb and gloves we used to make out of regular canvas and cotton canvas material, and we used to sew them ourselves, and we'd fill them in with cotton. Regularly, we'd just go out in the field and pick out a little cotton, fill them up, and the ball was made out of rags and maybe string. And besides that, that's about all we used to do, except when I grew up, little boy, of course, they had a little movie theater in Bishop, and we used to go see Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and Tom Mix and Johnny Mac Brown and all those cowboys.
And who owned the theater? What was the theater called?
Well, I'm not sure. Of course, the theater changed names several times. I think one time they used to call it the Texas Theater and then the Rio. And I think it's 15 cents. Anybody under 12 years old was 15 cents, and anybody over 12 was 35 cents. So.
And what time
was the show? Usually on Saturdays they did. Saturdays and Sundays, the matinee started about 2 o'clock, maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it'd go on until about 11. People were real clannish. They stuck together quite a bit, and they wouldn't want to have, at the time, they didn't want to have nothing to do with nobody else but themselves. And of course, they were farmers, and they were real good workers. And they had their own school at Concordia. They had a little community called Concordia, close to about 6 miles, I'd say, northeast of Bishop. And they had their own school, and it was in German. By the time that those kids came to high school, all they could speak, most of them could speak none but German. And in fact, their accent was a whole lot worse than ours, trying to speak English from Spanish to English. So we didn't have too much trouble there as far as except for the discrimination about allowing Mexican Americans at the time in high school. And of course, the Negro wasn't allowed to way later than that. I think probably Negroes who started going to high school, I couldn't say, but I'd be about right somewhere in the 50s. And other than that, like I say, we used to work And we used to work out in the field, pick cotton, and harvest grain or stack grain, forage grain for maybe $1, $1.50 a day at that time, which was at the time good wages. Because you used to buy a loaf of bread there, we used to call it fair-made bread, is what you call now, rainbow, is it rainbow? But you used to call it fair-made bread, and then you used to go, as I remember, 8 cents for the small loaf and 14 cents, no, yeah, 14 cents for the large loaf. And compared to 40, what is it, 35 now, or something like that. Then a quart of milk would cost around maybe 9 cents, 10 cents. But anyway, the Negroes, we had their own community. The Mexican people were very close to the Negro community. And of course, like I say, most of the German community was lived in farms. And in the, what they call a, probably the Anglo-Saxons, which were maybe Irish or Scottish, English blood, they more or less formed the town. And of course, they controlled the business. They controlled the banks later on. And there was that hatred about Mexicans and Negroes. And of course, they even, some of them hated the Germans too. And in fact, during the World War, Second World War, German World War, there was a lot of friction between the German community and the rest of the people in Bishop. Times were rough, I would say, for the Mexican and the Negro, because there was no opportunity for them at that time. You either made it by doing hard work, and you were a good man if you said yes, sir, and you were just plain no good if you didn't answer yes, sir. So that's what it amounted to at the time, as far as the racial differences. You know, bringing up the subject about Mother Lane, of course, a lot of people didn't believe this, but I saw it. To me, I saw it with my own eyes. We used to fix the rooms, or by fixing the rooms, I'd say put the benches and or chairs, or light up the place, or things like that, to watch her go into a trance. And for example, there was this, of course, my aunt thing weighed about 210, 215 pounds, and she fell into a trance, and she was sitting on this, what you call a tule, maybe bamboo chair that's were made in Mexico. You still find those kind of chairs, real flimsy chairs. And when she did fall into a trance, this spirit of what they used to call an 8-year-old trapeze performer, which got killed at the age of 8 years old, so as I was told, what got into her body as a spirit. And I saw the body of my aunt with this spirit of this young girl go up to the top of this rocking chair and just swing from one side to the other. I mean, you know, just swing as hard as she could. The chair never did, the rocker never did turn over, never did break. And she was just swinging and having a good time, yelling like everything. And that was one of the things that I saw, besides, you know, some of her work as far as treating people and curing people. Now, other things was that she could, certain spirit that would play the piano or say poetry, and she would just sit on the piano and play the piano just beautiful, or say poetry when, you know. I wish at the time they had recording tapes like this, that maybe I could have recorded some of her work. Well, I was just a kid. I didn't know any better anyway, but I wish now that I would have been able to have recorded some of her work. But some of the things were really something that unbelievable, really.
Can you tell us a little bit about the businesses that were in Bishop when we were going up the stores and
As far as businesses, my father had a little grocery store about a mile from west of Bishop. Eventually, there was another little store open later on, but there were so few Mexican families at the time that, of course, he was the only one for a long while. And of course, the credit was on the annual basis. You get credit on an annual basis, and you can't do that nowadays. In fact, you can't even give credit because you might lose what you got. But at that time, people seemed to pay up the bills pretty good, and my father didn't have much trouble. People were real close at the time. The other businesses in town, of course, they were run by what were called either Anglo-Saxons or the German people. And they had, three other grocery stores that I remember. There was a gin. Gin and cotton. There was a platform where all the vegetables were trucked in, like radishes, onions, and beets, and carrots, and things like that, cash crops. And then grain elevators were developed later. They had a couple of filling stations there, and a little ice, not an ice plant, but a place where they would bring ice from Kingsville. And of course that was available, and a little garage and things like that, but nothing fancy.
Do you know
anything about S.A. Bishop? And no, all I know is that he owned all that land where Bishop was formed, and that's why the name Bishop came about.
Did you know him, or did you know the daughters?
No, I would imagine that he did have some kind of business with him, because he did buy a couple of blocks of land there in town. And but like I say, he was brought up, you know, west of town to form a separate community, in other words.
What were your impressions about the west side of town?
At the time, we didn't think nothing of it, because we were used to the idea of being in the west side, and that was where we lived, and that's where we stayed. Of course, any time we went to the Anglo part of town, especially to buy groceries or buy things that we needed, or clothing or something like that, of course, we always had the Anglo kids, you know, buy with us, or when they started getting BB guns, well, they'd shoot at us with BB guns, but we were dead shots with our nigger shooters. They were slingshots. And so we would outmaneuver them most of the time, because of course our slingshots could shoot further and hit harder.
Do you remember any of the influential people in Bishop had at
that time,
besides Bishop, or either
in
the Anglo or Saxon side or the
Mexican American side? Well, there was the Johnsons, the Browns, the Browning. Mrs. Browning was a real nice lady.
What did she do?
Her husband, I don't remember. I think he was a farmer at the time. And now I'm not talking about him being nice, but his wife was. She was real nice. There was some nice people in Bishop that could see that we were having a hard time to get around, but they knew we were making it, and we were in, at least we were trying to make it, she said. And but then there was also some people there that didn't care much for us in the first place. And I think the main change came in when, probably after Celanese came in. This brought a lot of people from the outside that weren't used to this kind of thing of hatred between races, or didn't see that difference between Mexicans and Americans. And I think eventually, little by little, that started a movement. Then, of course, we formed what they call the LULAC Council, number 160 or something like that, in Bishop. We began to cooperate with the people, not to fight them, not to not to really join them either, but to cooperate with them to where we could build, do good for the community as a whole, not just for any group, any certain group, you see. We started working towards the betterment of the whole community, the bishop community. And I think some of those people saw the light that we were being truthful to what we were trying to do. And they kind of joined us in working together and doing a lot of the things that have been done in Bishop through cooperation among different groups. And I think this has brought a great change in Bishop.